I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, it's Election Day. We'll talk about the races that could help put an era of performative politics behind us. Plus, we have a winner.
My family looked to our leaders to help, but Spokane Mayor Nadine Woodward didn't stand with us.
The single worst campaign ad of the entire cycle marks a new low for the state Democratic Party. And some congressional Democrats are starting to take a stand against the far-left fringe. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, this is a people-powered podcast. If you like the content and you want to support the show, you can do that for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Election Day. Love it. Love it. Love it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, which you must exercise on an election day such as this one. I'm Brandi Cruz. A reminder, tonight we are going to have live election coverage at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time. Ballots start coming in at 8, so we like to get a good handle on some of the key races. And then Nicole and I will both be here to bring you, hopefully, some good news. We will focus on races that we have been covering on this show as a way to bring that coverage full circle. But if there are also races you're interested in us covering and discussing tonight, please talk about them in the comments and we will consider it, shall we? I know that there's a lot of, Nicole was telling me too, and this was the same on my ballot, there's a lot of uncontested races, a ton of uncontested races. And frankly, unless I'm super excited about the candidate or it's someone who I know, I typically leave the uncontested ones blank because it's like, well, what's the point anyway? Clearly that one's going to win. But I asked you guys in our daily subscriber poll a simple question. Are you voting today? And I am hoping, I haven't checked yet, I'm hoping that 100% of you said yes. The question was, if you're a registered voter who received a ballot for today's election, do you plan to vote? Hugh asked on Patreon. Is this a trick question? I don't know if that's because the way I worded it. But yes, I'm only interested if you're voting, if you're a registered voter and you received a ballot for the election. Some of the comments, Ray says, I vote every time, tired of seeing judges go unopposed. I don't check their boxes. Yeah, and I don't blame you, but seeing judges go unopposed just breaks my heart, especially knowing how many activist judges that there are. Chris says it is our civic duty to vote, and we should be more excited to vote than we are for the Super Bowl or the World Series. I tend to agree as well. I also heard from Andrea said, I'm a registered voter. I received my voter's pamphlet, too, actually, and no one in my house received our voter ballots. Well, that's not good. You should check on that. But also, I've had an election where I don't remember. I think I misplaced my ballot. I think I shredded it or accidentally. Mm-hmm. So you can go online and request, you do like a special ballot where you actually print it at home, fill it out, send it in. So there is.
I did yesterday.
That's what you did?
Yes.
What happened to your ballot?
I couldn't find it.
Nicole, real responsible. But there are ways you can still vote if you haven't got your ballot in the mail. But I would absolutely check with your local county election office and ask, why didn't I get my ballot?
You can just go online really quick. It's super easy. Don't be intimidated.
Don't be intimidated. Yeah, I did it because it was the last time I had to do that. It was like an important election. I'm like, I'm not missing this one. I'm very proud of my voting record. So I'm like, I'm not going to miss it. Let's see. Let's read a couple more. Lisa, I'm interested to see what happens with my vote this year. I followed all the protocols to ensure that my ballot does not count since I've moved out of state. My ballot was still mailed to me. Well, let's hope. And I've heard of this happening. It's what we call an opportunity for fraud. Right. It happened at my home when I had a family member living with me who moved out of state, registered to vote elsewhere, and I got a ballot like 3 or 4 or 5 election cycles for them and was constantly like, can I stop getting a ballot for this person? Anyway,
it's very concerning.
It is concerning, but it's not fraud until you fill it out. I think that's a confusion people get often is, oh, this is fraud. It's not fraud until you fill it out.
It's true, but there are people that might fill it out.
Well,
and that's what people are concerned about is people not being honest.
I'm not saying it's not a concern, but if you fill it out, that is a felony, right? It's still a felony or is it a gross misdemeanor? It's serious stuff. So don't fill it out, obviously. So a couple of things that we're going to be tracking today, and we like to look at things from a broader scale, right? This isn't a breaking news show. It's not meant to be, hyper-local just to Seattle, but there are certainly some races and some themes that we're tracking. And I think performative politics and trying to move on from a really destructive, disastrous period period of performative politics is something that I pray to God that voters can accomplish, particularly in the city of Seattle. I know a lot of you don't live in Seattle. We talk about it because what happens in Seattle impacts every single resident of this state, every single one of you. We have seen policies pushed in Seattle and activism that starts in Seattle, find its way to surrounding areas and down to Olympia, which results in policy and state law that impacts all of us. I will say, before I talk about my fears for today, can I talk about the one good thing going into today? The one good thing that no matter what happens tonight, we can be excited about? And that's that Shama Sawant isn't on the ballot. Seattle's socialist city councilwoman, who today is currently the longest serving member of the Seattle City Council, she's not on the ballot. She decided she's not going to run again, which is very good. And she sent out a tweet yesterday that I think underscores why it's just so great for the city of Seattle and the state as a whole. She was saying, you know, what is she going to do on election day today? Is she getting out the vote or supporting candidates? No, she said, I'm bringing a resolution for a ceasefire in Gaza and an end to all military funding for Israel to the Seattle City Council at the 2 p.m. meeting at City Hall and encourage people to show up. That is so indicative of what her tenure on the Seattle City Council has been about. It's been about her personal political star in the Socialist Party. It's been about focusing on larger national, worldwide movements and completely leaving the people of her district, which is Capitol Hill areas of South Seattle, to just sit. And record crime, businesses suffering. Her district is the one that had Chaz Chop, which she fully supported and endorsed. And this is the kind of stuff that she does. This is the same woman who 2 weeks ago ran down a hallway away from a reporter who had the audacity to actually ask her about an issue facing the people of her district, which is policing and a lack of police officers and her calls to defund police. She didn't want to answer to that, so she ran down a hallway, yet she has plenty of time to bring a resolution for a ceasefire in Gaza. And an end to all military funding for Israel to the Seattle City Council, as if that is anywhere in the realm of anything that the Seattle City Council would have any control over whatsoever. So just by Shama Sawant not being on the ballot in District 3, that is going to strike a much needed blow to performative politics in Seattle, because all that woman does is perform. That's all she does, is put on a show for a party of one. Well, party of one herself and then all her little activist friends. So that's just good. So if we have one, let's go into it with that positive vibe. No more Shama Sawant once whoever wins that district comes out. I'll also say of Seattle, before I talk about a couple other races that we're going to be eagerly watching today, there was a really good, interesting op-ed in the Seattle Times, this opinion piece from an SPD detective. I'm glad the agency allowed this detective to write it, Amy LeClaire. And she talked about, she didn't endorse any political candidates specifically, but she wrote about some of the challenges that police officers in the city of Seattle are facing and how it's so important for voters to cast their votes for people who understand the public safety crisis that we're in, to cast their votes for people who understand that, you know, we cannot have a police department that is this low on staffing and has morale that is this bad. I'll just read a couple passages of it. Again, the headline, I'm an SPD detective. Here's what matters to me in the 2023 election. The Seattle City Council does not acknowledge or want the citizens to know the actual number of police officers who have left and the ever-decreasing numbers of officers who are available to respond to your emergencies and investigate your crimes. These are the facts. We have lost over 600 sworn officers since 2020. With few new officers being hired, the current staffing levels are dangerously low, and we are well below any recommended safety standard per U.S. guidelines. And that is a fact. That's true. And the Seattle City Council, some members have tried to dismiss the fact that officers are leaving for political reasons. They are leaving because of the toxic political environment. They write about it in their exit interviews. She went on to write, the time is nearing where many others will leave if something doesn't change soon. Staffing levels have reached dangerous levels, and the police department is in danger of falling apart due to the extreme views and self-serving policies of the city council. The time for change is now. It is dangerously close to being too late. I don't endorse any particular candidates. I endorse better candidates. We need better. We can do better. That coming from Seattle Police Detective Amy LeClaire in an opinion piece in the Seattle Times. And I couldn't agree more, but I would say that when she says, you know, it's dangerously close to being too late, I tend to agree with that. And one election is not going to fix it. One election is not going to fix the depth of incompetence, the depth of performative politics, the depth of extremism on the Seattle City Council, but it can go a long way. You know, I look at two of the citywide seats aren't on the ballot. So you have 7 of 9 Seattle City Council seats, which is an opportunity for a major overhaul of the Seattle City Council. And I look at someone like Sarah Nelson, who won one of the citywide seats. She's a former business owner. And what she's been able to do in terms of just trying to get the city council to focus on public safety and trying to force their hand. One good council member who has common sense, who doesn't care about performative politics, who values public safety, that can make a huge, huge difference. And so, you know, 7, and if there's a complete overhaul, I've already said I don't think any of the incumbents should keep their jobs, particularly when you're talking about incumbents who supported police defunding, Andrew Lewis in downtown, Dan Strauss in the Ballard District, Tammy Morales, who is Shama Sawant Light down in the International District. I don't think any of them should keep their jobs. But when this officer says she doesn't endorse any particular candidates, I think it's clear who she doesn't endorse. I think the status quo is something that she's basically saying has to go. Let's see. So Seattle will be huge tonight. Again, we'll talk about that in our coverage. Another race we're watching, Snohomish County Sheriff. You would not believe the unhinged. So we got into this race. Adam Forty is the current sheriff in Snohomish County. I think he's been great for public safety because he does not care what people say about him. And I think if you're in a job like that, in the times that we're in right now, with the public safety crisis that we're in, you have to truly not give a damn what sort of partisan attacks are going to be thrown at you. And we got into the race because he was subjected to a really unfair hit piece in the Everett Herald, which was an actual piece of quote-unquote reporting, not an opinion piece, you know, labeling him as controversial and far right and making it sound bad that he has, quote, constitutional leanings. So we went out, as you know, and many of you joined us and waved signs for Adam Forty. I think it was last Monday, yeah, a week ago, and had a great time. And so I'm very personally invested now in the outcome of this race. But you would not believe, I mean, the state Democratic Party is coming all out for his opponent in this race. I had a friend who lives in Snohomish County who got a just like one of those auto robo text messages from the Alliance for Gun Responsibility saying we have to defeat right-wing Sheriff Adam Forty. And she was nice because she just responded by saying, like, stop, don't text me again. But I would have been like, over my dead body. Or something like that.
Those texts are out of control. Oh my God. So many.
Those texts are out of control. So we'll certainly be looking at what's happening up there. And then the school board races. I mean, school boards have really become ground zero for what I consider to be a fight against the woke ideology. And this seeping of political and social issues into our public schools at all levels. I mean, how many, particularly the Olympia School District, I'm very interested to see what happens there because it has become a national poster child for what happens when you force your political and social agenda on kids. I mean, they've had wild stories from Planned Parenthood coming in and teaching fourth and fifth graders that they can identify as a tree if they want. And that is an actual real story. And Olympia has also exposed some of the danger with these policies around gender ideology at the statewide level that basically encourage secret keeping between staff and teachers and students. We exposed a story, we did an exclusive on a teacher that started to engage in a really inappropriate private, not a sexual one, but a private communication relationship with a student who would come to school and identify as a different name and gender. And because statewide policy says that teachers and staff, if the kid doesn't want to, don't have to and can't tell that to parents, it almost fosters this secretive environment, which the Olympia School District has fully embraced. So there are a lot of school board races we're watching. Snohomish County Sheriff's race is really interesting to us. Another one, all the way across the state, lest you think that we're only focused on the west side of the state, is the mayor's race in Spokane. So you have Nadine Woodward, and you have Lisa Brown. So Lisa Brown used to be the head of commerce under Jay Inslee. Yeah, while commerce was going through all that debacle during the pandemic, incredibly mismanaged. And the Spokane mayor's office is something that Democrats have eyed for a long time. Because I think a lot of people look at the east side of the state as this Republican bastion, but Spokane really isn't all that red, and it's getting bluer and bluer by the day, and you have Democrats who are just like a dog on a bone. They'll do anything, they'll say anything to try to take the mayor's office in Spokane from Republicans. And this race has gotten, first of all, particularly nasty. And I will say, I got sent this yesterday. This apparently aired during the Seahawks game, the most recent Seahawks game. This is the winner. This is the winner for the worst political attack ad of the entire election cycle. So the ad was paid for by the Washington State Democratic Party. And it is an attack ad against the current mayor, Nadine Woodward. I'm just going to play it, and then we'll assess it on the back end. And the quality, I'll say, is not great. I think somebody posted maybe something they just recorded off the TV, and it's the only place we can find it. But watch.
Let's make crime illegal again.
When my childhood home burned to the ground this summer in the Gray Fire, my family looked to our leaders to help. But Spokane Mayor Nadine Woodward didn't stand with us. Instead, she stood with accused domestic terrorist Matt Shea, praying for fire to consume Spokane. And Nadine Woodward got her wish. Hundreds of homes, just like mine, were destroyed that same day. Spokane, we deserve better. Defeat Nadine Woodward. Return your ballot by Election Day, November 7th. This message paid for by Washington State Democrats.
Oh my God. So, wow, where do I even start with that one? I laugh, but there's a couple things that actually really anger me about it. We don't know if that voice actor, or if that's a voice actor or a real victim of the fires that happened in the Spokane area this summer. When I hear it, I tend to think it's probably a voice actor that's been hired because they sound very professional. Now, we've reached out to the Washington State Democratic Party. And we've asked them, because this to me is the biggest, there's a lot of issues with this ad, I'll say. But the biggest insult would be if they hired an actor to pretend that they're a fire victim for political gain. There are real people who lost their homes in the fire. So if this is the Washington State Democratic Party, which I suspect it is, hiring a voice actor to pretend as if they're the victim of a wildfire, and then spinning something that happened at a prayer service to use it against the mayor of Spokane to act as if she didn't care about the people who had their homes burned to the ground, that is the lowest I've ever seen. If that's the case, which again, I suspect it is, we've reached out to confirm, that is the lowest I've ever seen the state Democratic Party go in a political ad. The absolute lowest. To impersonate a fire victim. How horrendous is that? That is awful. And then, not to mention, Nicole, can we play the ad again? Sorry. Nicole's like, please, no, it's so bad. But yes, let's play it again.
Let's make crime illegal again.
When my childhood home burned to the ground this summer in the Gray Fire, my family looked to our leaders to help. But Spokane Mayor Nadine Woodward didn't stand with us. Instead, she stood with accused domestic terrorist Matt Shea, praying for fire to consume Spokane. And Nadine Woodward got her wish. Hundreds of homes, just like mine, were destroyed that same day. Spokane, we deserve better. Defeat Nadine Woodward. Return your ballot by Election Day, November 7th. This message paid for by Washington State Democrats.
Good God. So again, like maybe this is some professional voice actor who their childhood home was literally destroyed. That could be the case. I just tend to really be skeptical of that. And why wouldn't you use their name, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll wait and see if the Washington State Democratic Party wants to actually tell us the truth about that. The other thing, though, for the when he talks about this prayer service Nadine Woodward was at, which we already criticized her for. She showed up for a prayer service that was Matt Shea, who was accused of domestic terrorism, who used to be a state lawmaker, and then he got kicked out of his own caucus. She showed up and he was on stage and she didn't know he was going to be on stage. And so she was faced with this decision of like, okay, this is a prayer service for fire victims. Do I actually get up with Matt Shea or do I turn around and walk away? She opted to get up. Look, it wasn't a good look. It was a self-inflicted wound, but it was what it was. In there, the quote that they say, and this guy's saying that she, instead of standing by fire victims, she joined a prayer that called for Spokane to be consumed by flames. And she got her wish. Oh my God. Do you really think that anyone standing up as part of that prayer service gave a prayer that, honest to God, was about Spokane, wanting Spokane to burn to the ground? No, first of all, we went and we looked up the stories about this that happened. It was the pastor. It wasn't Matt Shea even who said that. It wasn't Nadine Woodward. In fact, it sounds like it didn't even happen while she was up in those images, you know, praying with Matt Shea, that, and it sounded like it was a metaphor.
Well, actually, the Rolling Stone even uses it as part of their title, but it says, MAGA preacher prays for Jesus fire to consume Spokane.
Yeah, so he's talking so he's about, like,
making a metaphor.
And look, that's kind of a crappy metaphor mm-hmm. when there's actual fires going on. But clearly the guy wasn't talking about, oh, we want Spokane to burn
actual
to the ground.
Fire, right.
No, he's talking mm-hmm. about like a religious, I don't know, fire. Weird anyway, but still. Yeah. And for the state Democratic Party to suggest in any way using a real fire victim or a fake fire victim, the verdict's still out on that. That Nadine
Let's
Woodward
make crime.
Sorry.
Wanted to. Oh, well, that's okay. I've been played as many times as we need to.
Fire. My family looked to our leaders to help.
That Nadine Woodward wanted and prayed for Spokane to burn to the ground. It is the lowest, the absolute lowest that the state Democratic Party has ever gone. Even if that voice actor turns out to be a real guy whose childhood home actually like burned, you still completely manipulated a prayer that she didn't even give to suggest that she wanted her own residents to what, burn alive in a fire? For the love of God. That is so, so bad. I will also say there's this blog, it's called On the Ball 509, and they had first captured this video and put it out there, saying it aired halftime of the Seahawks game. They said that the guy they hired to produce it also works on softcore porn. they hired him out of Los Angeles. Because you would think, like, that people have the moral compass, even people who make political ads, which usually are pretty bad, mm-hmm. that they would say, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to create that ad and suggest that this mayor wanted people to burn alive in a wildfire. But he also works on softcore porn. So I guess that they had to go all the way to the depths of Los Angeles to find someone with a moral compass so absolutely non-existent that they would produce an ad like this to air days before an election. But anyway, we've reached out. What are the two questions that we asked of the
Was that a real
state
story?
Democratic Party? And was that a real guy?
Do you think it was appropriate to use a fake one if it was?
Yeah, so if mm-hmm. that's what we've asked. Was that a real fire victim? And if not, why in the world would you think it's appropriate to use a fake fire victim when there are so many real ones for political gain? So Washington State Democratic Party, we are eagerly awaiting your response. But barring some sort of phenomenally bad political attack ad out today, congratulations. You've just earned yourself the title of the absolute worst political ad of the cycle. All right. Moving on to the election, and again, we'll be back on tonight at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time with some live election coverage for you guys. But something interesting is happening in Congress. And I started to notice it slowly, mostly yesterday. But so on Sundays with Subscribers this past week, we had on Congressman Adam Smith, who's a Democrat from Washington State. He represents the 9th District. And I was sort of surprised by, we're having this conversation about what's happening in the Middle East and these far left fringe protesters who are out there like praising Hamas actions, essentially. And I was surprised the extent to which he was willing to go after the far left fringe for some of this vitriol.
Part of the problem is the extreme left wing activist ideology, which tries to divide the world between oppressed and oppressor. And if you are part of the oppressors, your opinion, you don't matter. You are to be fought constantly. And the way they divide that is incredibly arbitrary and factually inaccurate. And yeah, I think that extremism on the left that says these are the good people and these are the bad people, that's become a much bigger feature of ideology. It's this whole effort with the more, you know, extreme anti-racism approach that basically implies that only white people can be racist. I mean, and basically you can sort of divide it once you figure out the quote power dynamic. And if you are in what they decide to be the powerful class, you therefore, you know, have no rights, you are irrelevant. That extreme ideological way of looking at, you know, public debate on policy issues coming from the left is very dangerous and very problematic.
And so again, he said that on Sundays with Subscribers, and I thought, wow, I mean, it's kind of unusual. It shouldn't be unusual. It shouldn't be rare, but I think it's unusual for Democrats to speak out against that far, far left fringe because they're kind of scared of them, right? But then I got to thinking and I was like, well, he's been primaried by a Democrat, a progressive who fit that exact bill, who primaried him for Congress and was very anti-Israel, was very into sort of race baiting and the oppressor versus the oppressed. And so maybe Adam Smith realizes, like, hey, I'm going to speak out about that because these are the same people who are going to come for my job every 2 years. But then I started to see this was kind of a pattern going on. And I'm like, I wonder if Democrats have been directed by like Hakeem Jeffries or the White House to speak out more forcefully against some of these pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas protests, because even Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, so she sent out, and she's been criticized, we talked about her on our show, you know, she called Israel a racist state a couple months ago, and she has been kind of keeping too close of company with the squad in Congress, which, you know, they've been accused of being anti-Semitic. And so she sent out this tweet that to me was very intentional to try to shift the narrative of some people calling her an anti-Semite. She posted a picture of her in her congressional office meeting with two people. She said, Hamas committed a horrific act of terrorism when they kidnapped hundreds of civilians on October 7th. It was an honor and privilege to meet with the family of another hostage, Yarden. I share in their deep pain and will work hard to ensure she and other hostages get home safely. So that to me was, I'm not saying that she didn't care about the hostages at all, but to me, this was a very intentional, more forward-facing tweet where she was being clear in condemning Hamas outright with no equivocation. And then there were some members of Congress, again, Democrats, who were going even further. So Rashida Tlaib has been, you know, criticized as being completely anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish state. And you have now Democratic members of Congress from our state who are going after her directly. Congresswoman Kim Schreier, who represents the 8th Congressional District. She's a Democrat. She's still fairly new to Congress. She's been in for a couple terms now. But she's in a very purple district, which says a lot to me about what might have motivated her to actually go straight after Rashida Tlaib. She shared a post from Rashida Tlaib when, you know, Tlaib was defending this From the River to the Sea chant. And Congresswoman Schreier said, make no mistake, this expression is a call for the elimination of the state of Israel. It is irresponsible and dangerous for a member of Congress to amplify this cry. This is stoking the anti-Semitism that is spiking in this country and around the world. And again, it shouldn't be hard for someone who's a member of their own, of Tlaib's own party to condemn it. But it is something where there's a political calculation that's made. So all of a sudden yesterday, in the last 2 days, I see more and more Democratic members of Congress vocally condemning people like Tlaib and their narrative, or trying to distance themselves from the real fringe left activists who have, I mean, for all intents and purposes, been celebrating Hamas. And so either they're understanding that this particular issue is not polling well or reflecting well on them, and the Democratic Party has put down some edict that, hey, if you want to, you know, be seen as on the right side of this, then you need to distance yourself. I tend to think, given how much of this I've seen, like, virtually overnight, that there is some edict that has come down. That's how it reads to me. I'm not saying that they don't believe that, but typically you wouldn't put yourself out on a limb, which is why you don't see more Republicans, you know, condemning the crazy like Matt Gaetz and the like. So anyway, just something I'm noticing. I will say Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib is not taking too kindly to it. She is very mad that the White House, that her fellow Democrats are condemning her and seemingly sort of creating this united front to close her out. She put out this lengthy statement. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but she said, it's a shame my colleagues are more focused on silencing me than they are on saving lives as the death toll in Gaza surpasses 10,000. Many of them have shown me that Palestinian lives simply do not matter to them, but I still do not police their rhetoric or actions. Rather than acknowledge the voice and perspective of the only Palestinian American in Congress, my colleagues have resorted to distorting my positions in resolutions filled with obvious lies. Anyway, I mean, there's a whole laundry list of things that Tlaib has said in the past about the Holocaust. What did she call it? Will you Google this, Nicole? Did she call it like a fever dream or something? What did she say about the Holocaust previously? Look that up. We'll come back to it. But she said some pretty grotesque things. And I'm not trying to compare someone like Rashida Tlaib to Congresswoman Jayapal. I think Congresswoman Jayapal has made some troublesome statements on Israel, but clearly she's trying to even distance herself from Tlaib. So I'll see if there's any other Democratic members of Congress who want to jump aboard that train. But this is a, first of all, I'll just say before we move on, This is a perfect time to distance yourself from the far left crazies. If you've been, for some reason, if everything they've done in the last 4 years hasn't been enough, you know, from defunding to the riots and all of that, if that hasn't been enough to distance yourself from the absolute lunacy, maybe them being blatantly anti-Semitic and wanting Jewish people to die is just the motivation you needed to actually grow a backbone and distance yourself from that toxic wing of the party. And I'm not saying there's not a toxic wing of the Republican Party. Of course there is. But there have been Republicans who are more eager to distance themselves from that than the Democrats in the far left. Did you find it?
Yeah. So it says, like, it begins, there's kind of a calming feeling I always tell folks when I think of the Holocaust and the tragedy of the Holocaust and the fact that it was my ancestors, Palestinians, who lost their land and some lost their lives, their livelihood, their human dignity, their existence in many ways have been wiped out and some people's passports. So it gives her a calming feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, let's try to tell people that they're manipulating your sentiment when you say things like that. All right. Crazy. All right. I'm going to talk about my success on the East Side Weight Loss Clinic plan. Why? Because I look damn good. Okay. And not that I didn't look good a year ago, but I put on a lot of weight during the pandemic. Let's just be honest about it. You guys were too nice to say anything, apparently, but I'm hoping that Nicole is now going to make sure that I'm on track. Nicole's not. She would never tell me that. But I am on track because the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan is easy to follow. And even during this time of year, I mean, I started the program during the holidays last year, and I still managed to lose almost 30 pounds in 2 months, like through Thanksgiving, through Christmas, because it's a program that fits with your life. You don't have to sit there and eat prepackaged meals or count calories or take drugs or injections or anything else like that. It's just teaching you how to eat, what to eat in the right portions, and how to maintain the weight loss for life. So if you've been thinking about it, reach out to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, and start by just scheduling a free 15-minute consultation to get all your questions answered before you commit. By the way, I should note today, we just launched a new tab on our website, undividedpod.com. It takes, because this is by popular demand, you guys wanted us to do this, it takes you to all of our sponsors on one page. So if you're wanting to support our show sponsors, which is a great way to support the show, you can find them all on one tab at undividedpod.com. Click on Meet Our Sponsors. How handy is that? All right. As much as the election today is the priority and making sure you get those ballots in, there is also, as we speak, another thing happening that gives you a chance to change the direction of our communities and the direction of our state. More and more, now that we've had this really solidified one-party rule in Washington state, I'm hoping that that will slowly erode, but it leaves people who dissent from that particular worldview feeling a little bit helpless. And I totally understand that. But that's why more than ever, initiatives and referendums are the backstop. They are the only way that people who dissent from the prevailing political view in Washington state can make changes. And so, you know, I've been supportive of some referendums and some initiatives, and there are six ongoing right now that can change fundamentally so much of what's wrong in Washington state. So many of the things that we complain about, there's six initiatives there. If you go to letsgowa.com, you can read about each of them. I mean, we're talking about repealing the carbon tax, which has led to the high gas prices, restoring reasonable police pursuit so police can actually pursue dangerous people who are wreaking havoc on our communities. And another one that I don't think has gotten quite as much attention is Initiative 2124. 2124, it's one of the six that Let's Go Washington is collecting signatures on as we speak. And what it would do is make the long-term care tax optional. So remember the whole debacle of the long-term care program when it was forced upon us and they're saying the government is going to force you to pay into a system so that one day down the road you might benefit from a little bit of help with your long-term care. And they gave most people just a tiny little window to be able to opt out of the state program by buying a private program. But anyway, so July 1st, whether you noticed it or not, money for the long-term care program has been coming out of your paychecks. And I think it's not something as obvious as the gas tax, so I think a lot of people kind of forget that it's coming out of their paychecks. But if Initiative 2124, by the end of the year, can get enough signatures, then it goes to the legislature. And then they're either going to have to adopt it and make this long-term care tax thing optional where we can opt out of it, if you didn't already, Or if they don't do anything with it, it's going to go to the people. And so I just wanted to bring this back up today because I think it's a reminder that even if you feel like you're not going to be able to make a difference, whatever races are happening on your ballot today, there are these six initiatives ongoing that will make a huge difference. And so I asked Elizabeth Hovde with the Washington Policy Center, who's an expert on this long-term care program and some of the issues with it. I asked her to come on today just to remind you about some of the problems with it, some of how it works. And my motivation, I guess, was to motivate you to go sign Initiative 2124. But here's Elizabeth Hovde. Elizabeth, welcome to Undivided.
Hi, thanks for having me. Thanks for bringing this issue to your audience.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good thing to kind of continuously revisit because I don't know about you, but this is one of those things where it feels, you know, we could talk about gas prices and people see it almost every week when they fill up at the pump and the carbon tax. But this is something that's just coming out of their paycheck. And so I feel like maybe people, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Definitely. You know, I don't like walk hairs because it won't work. It only benefits state budget writers. And despite the state's marketing for the social program, it hurts workers' incomes, including low-income workers. And it's for a benefit that many Washington workers will never even need or use. And in many cases, instead of a worker's income helping them keep their head above water, the money goes to people with more resources and more income to help them with this possible life need. It's a reverse Robin Hood program. It's backward.
Yeah. So what are some of the, and look, you know, I'm against it too. I think it should either be made optional or they should do away with it entirely. That's my opinion. But if it's here to stay, let's just say, what are some of the continuing real glaring issues with the WalkCare's long-term care program in your eyes?
That low-income workers are being harmed. You're taking their money today. We have a safety net program for long-term care for people in need through Medicaid. We should be strengthening and protecting Medicaid, not penalizing people during their working years who are going to qualify for Medicaid anyway in the long run. This is a safety net created for people not in need, and that's a huge problem. The other problems are, you know, you may not qualify for this thing. There are a lot of hurdles that have been erected to keep you from getting this benefit. By design, right? So one is if you move out of state, let's say you move to Arizona to see the grandkids, live near the grandkids, whatever, find son, you're not going to get this benefit. So you could have paid in for 30 years. And if you live out of state, you won't get it. Secondly, the benefit amount is a lifetime benefit of $36,500. That is not adequate for long-term care needs. Anyone helping their parent with long-term care right now knows that's a laughable amount to say you should have peace of mind for long-term care. You can't. Another one of the things that really bothers me is that the vestment criteria is needing to pay into this fund for 10 years without a break of five or more years. Think about all the people that this could rule out. You've got moms who stay at home with kids. You've got people who do end up doing the very thing this program is about, caring for their elderly loved ones. And they may not qualify because you need 10 years without five. If you take 5 years off to do either of these things or other things in your life, you have to start the 10 years over. So I think that's a huge problem. I've been asking them to change it. More importantly, though, they should just repeal the tax. This is not for workers. This will not help our long-term care problem in this nation that we are going to have. It's costly and we're a growing population. But giving people their income to use for today's needs and invest for future life needs, which there will be many, not just long-term care, is so important.
Well, I think you bring up a couple points because we've talked about the glaring issues, right? Like, really, I can pay into this my entire life. And if because I want to move to the sunshine, like so many people do, then I forfeit the benefit entirely. That's just stupid. That doesn't make any sense. But you bring up some that to me feel a little more nefarious. Like you said, you know, this has really been pushed as helping, you know, those most in need, as you said, with care when they're older, which I understand it's such a huge issue in this country. But you have those people who are going to qualify for Medicaid. So they're going to pay in right now when they need that money. They don't need it taken out of their paycheck only to qualify for Medicaid anyway. Or people who are at home, like you said, taking care of their elderly loved ones, take 5 years off work, and all of a sudden they don't even qualify for this program anyway. What do you think would happen to the program if it were to be made optional? Which I think makes a lot of sense, right? You want it? Opt in. You don't? Opt out. What do you think would happen to the viability of the program?
Well, what we saw, I checked the numbers at the beginning of October, and at that time, only 400 people among all the self-employed workers in this state that could opt into the program if they wanted to, because they're not required to be in the program like W-2 workers, 400 had opted in. When people see this program and learn about it, they don't want it. So I think that opting in, and there is a legislative group, a lawmaker group also pushing for that. There's another lawmaker pushing for repeal, which I prefer. But I think opt-in will shut it down.
So I'm sorry, hold on a second. So 400 people who have the option to opt in right now, being self-employed individuals, are you talking about 400 statewide?
Yes.
400 and self-employed people in the entire state have chosen to opt into it?
Yes. Oh, and a reminder, over 500,000 opted out when they could, buy a private plan that had better benefits for them or better for their situation. Nearly 500,000 did. And now we have into the thousands again for people on non-immigrant work visas who were included in the program and should have never been. They can't qualify from it being an out-of-state resident. Out-of-state workers as well, they're opting out. So we have thousands of people opting out that will add to that 500,000, worsening the solvency for this thing, which is questionable. And so in the future, you know, and the recent commission meeting that made that's talking about recommendations they're going to make to the legislature for this program just highlighted again that the lawmakers can tweak this program at any time. You could see that tax rate of 0.58% rise, just like you did with paid family leave. That went from 0.4 to 0.8 in just a few years. I can imagine the same will happen here, and they can always decrease the benefit if they want. I don't think they will because it's already laughable, but they could. They could increase, they could decrease, they could change the parameters. Already they're talking about making it a 1,000 hours worked each year requirement to count for a qualifying year. The way it exists right now is 500.
Yeah, I mean, nothing about it makes sense. And it's government really at its governance really at its worst. And you know, what you said there about, hey, if this thing, it's so deeply unpopular, it's not making them enough money. And so they could just go in and rather than reevaluate it entirely and say, okay, there's a reason this is failing, they just increase the tax on the people who are paying into it. And it's unbelievable. So, Elizabeth, we appreciate your time and expertise and putting this back on people's radar, because there is an opportunity to change it. There's an opportunity for the legislature to at least fix it if they're really dead set on keeping this thing. So we will see what happens.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks again to Elizabeth Hufde with the Washington Policy Center. And look, I understand that there's a lot of crappy stuff and state policies that have been on your radar over the last 6 months, but don't forget about the long-term care tax that is being taken out of your paychecks, whether you even want the long-term care benefits later on in life or you're going to retire somewhere sunny. I don't know if I'm going to retire somewhere sunny. I might. Who knows? But again, I think I also want to prepare you for something over that's going to happen over the next month and a half. So these Let's Go Wah, and again, you can find, by the way, if you go to letsgowah.com, you can read up on all six initiatives if you haven't signed them already, and you can find, there's a little map, you can find places to sign them, you can volunteer, you can even get hired to help collect signatures, all of that. So go to letsgowah.com. But one thing you're going to see absolutely in the next month is a downright full court press vilification of this effort. You're going to see every trick in the book pulled out to try to downplay, vilify this effort and these initiatives. Why? It's because this would destroy some of the policies that Democrats are most proud of. So again, if you look at the six initiatives, reasonable police pursuit, it would restore to the old standard. It would stop the carbon tax, which is raising gas prices, which is popular with approximately no one besides Jay Inslee and a handful of state legislators. I-2124, which would allow you to opt out of the state's long-term care program. There's an initiative that would repeal the capital gains tax. There's an initiative that would make sure that Democrats can't push through another illegal income tax. And there's also an initiative that would help improve parental notifications when it comes to your kids in school. So these are six things that if these initiatives get enough signatures by the end of the year and they go to the legislature, it forces their hand. They either have to adopt them as law, undoing some of their most the policies they're most proud of, or they can ignore them. But in that case, the initiatives will then next year go to you, the people. And Democrats know that these things are so deeply unpopular that these will pass at a statewide level to undo all the things they've done. So in the next month, I'm warning you now, there is going to be an outright vilification of this effort. Make sure that you are reading everything you see, vetting everything you see to make sure you're getting factual information about what's going on. But anyway, so just a reminder, if you feel like there was nothing on your ballot that really tickled your fancy or you felt like would make a difference today, these initiatives are ongoing and man, they would overhaul what's been happening in the state for the last couple of years. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, the University of Washington caught explicitly hiring a professor on the basis of race. We'll discuss that. But first, as we talk about sort of the state of the economy and some of the issues that people are struggling with, if you are retired or you're heading toward retirement, it's really important to consider whether your retirement portfolio is positioned for success and whether risk is being managed. The last thing you want to do is have some risky portfolio a couple years out from retirement and then all that hard work to get to retirement is for nothing. Our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, this is something he talks about on the show with us every week.
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows. Right. But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything. Right.
Yeah. And the good news is Zach can help you with that. Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital are having their final live webinar of the year Thursday, November 16th. You can learn about their risk management strategy and how it is right now protecting people's retirement portfolios against loss. So again, final live webinar of the year, Thursday, November 6th at 3 p.m. It's free, but space is limited. So you can reserve your spot at knowyourriskradio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. All right, the UW violated not only its own policies, but also state law when a professor was hired explicitly because they were Black. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. We know this happens. Come on. We know in Washington State and Seattle and the DEI initiatives, we know that people are being hired on the basis of race. Absolutely no question in my mind. The issue is whether you can prove it, right? The issue is whether you can explicitly prove that, let's say you're a white applicant, that someone of color got the job over you specifically because of the color of their skin, or vice versa. Let's say a white person is hired and you can explicitly prove if you're a person of color that they were hired because they were white and you're not. Well, at the University of Washington, there was a hire where it seems like there is absolutely concrete evidence that a white person was suggested for the job. And then because of DEI concerns, the job was actually given to a Black individual. So here is the article from Campus Reform. Report, U of Washington broke its own rules and state law to hire a professor based on race. And I'll also note that as I talk about the findings of what were an internal investigation, the University of Washington also released this. So this is actually coming from the University of Washington. You know when they released it though, Nicole? This is funny. Halloween. Of course.
Of course.
Of course they put out the report that found that they're just racist on Halloween. But so this had to do with the hiring of an assistant professor in the psychology department. When the committee narrowed the search to three candidates for the offer, the three finalists were in this order: white, Asian, and Black. White, Asian, and Black. So the hiring committee looking to fill this particular position, they interviewed people, they narrowed the candidates in order. It was the white candidate that they were recommending for the job, then an Asian candidate, and then a Black candidate. It says a member of the committee reached out to the white finalist to unofficially notify him of the offer. Basically like, hey, it sounds like you're going to get this job, right? One of the hiring members was upset at the Black applicant's place and took it up with the department's strategic Planning Committee, despite the SPC not having a role in the search process. The report then says that the SPC imposed additional hurdles before the final offer, including a justification paragraph for the hiring decision. The revised order of offers, so they do this, and they kind of respond to this anger that the person being selected isn't a black person. So then all of a sudden, behind the scenes, the revised order becomes this: black candidate, Asian candidate, white candidate. So upon pushback over the race of the person who was going to get the job, there was a revised order of offers. It says the hiring committee then reportedly falsified its revised hiring report to omit the cancellation of meetings and hide the reevaluation of applicants based on their race. So anyway, they go in, and not only is that a violation of state law, but it's also a violation of the UW's own policies. But I was trying to find Nicole. I had it pulled up, but now I can't find it. What was the actual job title? Because it was relevant. Sorry, guys. I need to find it because it's so relevant to what this was. Okay. I found it. So it was the development psychology area of psychology department. They were recruiting an assistant professor of diversity in development.
Right.
So that was, sorry.
That's why a person today can't be white.
Yeah. Diverse. They were hiring an assistant professor of diversity in development. So they go through the legal spelled out process and they come back with their recommendations and the top candidate happens to be white. Well, oh my God, you cannot have a white person be the assistant professor of diversity and development. So they do all this finagling behind the scenes that they then try to go back and hide and erase. And all of a sudden, oh, the black candidate went from number 3 to number 1. And the Asian candidate just stayed in the middle. And so they were caught doing this. And so the University of Washington, again, there was an investigation that was done. The University of Washington released the report to the public on Halloween. And they said that as a punishment for violating not only state law, but also violating the university's own policies that you can't hire on the basis of race, the psychology department is prevented from searching for tenured and tenure track positions for at least 2 years, subject to review by the provost. It will also have its hiring processes thoroughly reviewed and revised by the dean's office, and faculty, oh, here it is, faculty will be trained in how to comply with law and policy. We talked about this on the show yesterday. You can't train people to follow the law. They knew. Mm-hmm. They knew they were breaking the law. It was clear by the way they tried to hide their tracks. So you think training them not to break the law is going to mean they don't break the law? It says the university also updated its institutional hiring practices.
What about the white person that didn't get a job?
I hope they're suing. That they're suing.
It wouldn't be a hard.
No, you just take that report and you give it to an attorney and you say, go get me millions of dollars.
Wild.
So, I mean, we know this stuff happens. Again, sorry, I couldn't remember the title of the position. Obviously, I am so ill prepared for this segment, but we know this happens. Come on. Mm-hmm. I read this report once that. So during 2020, when there was all this, you know, anger and about race and policing in the country, there was also this call for newsrooms to sort of diversify. That, oh, you have newsrooms where there's too many white people, and how could you cover issues around race? And NPR, like 70% or something of their new hires were non-white. Mm-hmm. And come on, that doesn't just happen. That doesn't happen naturally. That it just happens that you have this huge, huge segment of your new hires during this critical period of time where people are accusing your newsrooms of not being diversified enough, 70% of them.
Right.
You know, I do wonder though, because King 5 had a position that was posted for a like social justice reporter, a racial justice reporter.
Really?
And I'm like, this was months ago, and I don't know if somebody got it. No way they hired a white person for that job.
I would not believe so. They don't, I mean.
But also, what would happen?
I say it, but I don't think they hire many white people there anymore anyway.
Nicole, you're going to get some trouble. But seriously, if you have a job like this, again, that it seems like the job is about diversity, an assistant professor of diversity and development, I mean, and or you have a job at, as a King 5 reporter mm-hmm. that's for like reporting on race, how do you legally, clearly that's a job that you're not looking for a white person for. Mm-hmm. And so how does that work, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, so in some cases you're like, okay, you have experience in this, so you would be the best candidate for this particular role, not based on race, but based on experience.
Right.
I don't, and so some of those situations I might say that, this one, at UW, probably not, right? Or there's a lot of positions that tend to go that route, and we're saying, and that's what we're pointing out, is that it's not the best person. It's a, you have to meet this criteria.
Well, I also don't think that you need these positions. I don't think that public entities should be.
1,000% true.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I go back to what I said about, you have states like Washington that are so progressive and they spend all this money on DEI initiatives and all this stuff. And it's like, okay, so you think that your state agencies, your city and government agencies and everybody in it are just racist and your citizens are racist and you need to put all these protections in place to make sure that there's all this diversity, equity, inclusion. It's like, we're a progressive state. There's not racists running around all over the place, except maybe those pro-Hamas sympathizers.
And they do have a new race and equity reporter at King Fiverr. She started back in 22.
Is she white?
No, she would not be. I don't believe she would identify as Caucasian.
Oh my God. But maybe white people didn't apply. I mean, if I'm a white journalist looking for a job, I'm not going to apply for that job.
Right.
So that kind of weeds it out. The only job where it's appropriate for, we're really, really off the rails today. The only job where I am in favor of race-based hiring is the head of the NAACP. I mean, although Rachel Dolezal proved that you don't actually have to be black. You just have to pretend that you're black.
Right.
All right, with that, we're going to move on. all sorts of trouble. We've been talking about the state of the economy and the real estate market. Maybe you need to sell your home. Maybe you're moving out of state, unfortunately, like so many people are, and you're thinking, is this the best time to put my home on the market? Well, actually, despite the state of the economy and interest rates, home values have actually been ticking upward. Wes Jones with Wes Jones & Associates, a longtime real estate agent in our area, explained why.
We should be experiencing not necessarily a crash, but we should be seeing a reduction in purchase price. When you have interest rates jump up by, you know, nearly 40% in over a 12-month time span, that should be compressing pricing, but we're actually seeing the opposite. Prices have come up about 5% since the beginning of the year. And overall transaction count is down, just meaning less houses overall are selling, but they're still selling pretty quickly because there's been a lot of pent up demand, you know, over time. So, it's going pretty well, but in general, there are not enough homes on the market to meet demand.
Yeah. So it might not be a bad time to put your home on the market, but do a couple things first. So first, reach out to our friend, Wes Jones at Wes Jones & Associates, sellwithwes.com, and tell him that you want a free market analysis. So what he's going to do, he's going to assess the state of the market, your home, where it's being listed, the current, and make sure that now is the best time to put your home on the market. He's also going to talk about things like their listing boost concierge service. So maybe you need some updates or repairs to your home. Those are things that he and his team can help you with. They might even be able to fund them up front. But I'll say the number one thing you should do, sellwithwes.com, start by just plugging in your address and using their list or their home value calculator. It's really simple. It'll tell you how much your home is worth, might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, let's get some national stories in. Although I'm sensing a theme on the show today. Nicole, I'm sensing a theme having to do with race-based discrimination. The New York Post, this is fascinating. The New York Post is reporting on NASCAR being accused of discriminating against white men. So if you've been following it, there's this effort to sort of diversify NASCAR, which, by the way, before I get to this New York Post article, I'm not against efforts to diversify. I'm not against efforts to say, hey, you know, let's reach out to communities that maybe haven't been involved in whatever it is and try to bring them in, get them involved in it. That's not racism to me. It's when you are putting one class or race of people down to lift another up. But if the idea is that, hey, we want more of everyone involved, we want to come on in, let's do this together, race cars, whatever it is, cool. I have no issue with that. It's don't put one race down to lift another up. That's where it becomes racism to me. So anyway, the New York Post headline, NASCAR accused of discriminating against white men in their diversity efforts. It reads, American First Legal argues that NASCAR and Rev Racing's diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, such as the Diversity Driver Development Program and the Diversity Pit Crew Development Program and NASCAR's Diversity Internship Program, violate Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits discrimination based on race and sex. Even though that language has since been changed, America First Legal claims NASCAR and Rev Racing are continuing to carry out unlawful hiring practices under the cloak of a diverse backgrounds and experience rebranding. So what this lawsuit alleges is that you've got all these diversity efforts that are directly resulting in white people being passed over for opportunities in the interest of diversifying. And that's what I'm talking about. If you're talking about paid opportunities or unpaid opportunities that could help someone into a paid role, and you are specifically offering or targeting those opportunities to someone on the basis of their skin color, then that's racism. Plain and simple. We would never allow it as a society, unless it was like 100 years ago in America, and we're talking about like Jim Crow laws. We've changed since then, though. We have to allow for improvement as a country. We would never, in today's society, be okay with programs that were white pit crew development program, white internship program, white driver development program. That just would not happen. And so when you reverse it, it's not okay. So we'll see where this lawsuit goes. But it reminds me of also when we talk about the soft bigotry of low expectations, when you talk about paid internship programs and you cater them to people of color. I've talked about this before. There was a theater in town that did that, paid internships only for black kids. If you're a white kid, you could do an internship, but it wouldn't be paid. It's like, okay, you just have a really low opinion of people of color that they absolutely need it to be paid and there's no white poor people. Super weird stuff. All right. I'm curious if you agree with my definition of racism, by the way. That it's when you put one race down to lift up another. There's a lot of ways that you can include and lift up all sorts of different types of people from different backgrounds without simultaneously putting other races and backgrounds down or making things more difficult for them to succeed. Okay, I was watching Fox News this morning and this story popped up and I had to put it on the show today because it just, I mean, again, it goes to one of those things where we know it's happening. It happens to us. But it's another thing to be able to just explicitly prove it. So this is the headline from Fox News. Secret reports reveal how government worked to censor Americans prior to the 2020 election. The federal government disinformation experts at universities, big tech, and others worked to monitor and censor American speech, said Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan. And so congressional Republicans are looking into this. But what they say is that officials at the Department of Homeland Security assisted in the creation of a disinformation group at Stanford University that worked to censor the speech of Americans prior to the 2020 presidential election. It says the pressure was largely directed in a way that benefited one side of the political aisle. True information posted by Republicans and conservatives was labeled as misinformation, while false information posted by Democrats and liberals was largely unreported and untouched by the censors, the report said. The pseudoscience of disinformation is now, and has always been, nothing more than a political ruse most frequently targeted at communities and individuals holding views contrary to the prevailing narratives. And I think that one interesting aspect of this is, and it's something we experience, and I'll talk about it on the back end of this cut, but Representative Daryl Issa talked about what they found wasn't necessarily that conservatives and Republican posts by this group at Stanford being, you know, working in concert with the government, that they were being taken down, but sometimes their reach was throttled in a way that made the posts insignificant, and that's almost worse.
Well, it's a good example of why this sort of an organization shouldn't exist, period. If they were looking for civil rights violations, we would understand. But when you're looking for what is in the eye of the beholder, an opinion of what's inappropriate, the bias comes in very, very quickly. And that's what happened here. Conservatives were 9+1 taken down or throttled. And I repeat that last part. In some cases, we were reduced in what was seen, not completely taken down. That's the cruelest of all types of events where you don't know that you that no one's seeing you, but virtually no one's seeing you.
Yeah, and that's a very slimy way to do it, as opposed to saying, hey, and not that I agree with the practice, especially when not when it's the government working in concert with a university to limit speech just on one side of the aisle, it seems. But it's different if you have a post, and this has happened to me before, where I wound up in Facebook jail once for this post. And Facebook notifies you and you can contest it. And I ended up contesting it and it was their AI was wrong and a human being gave me my account back, which was nice. But that's one thing where you actually have an avenue to see, okay, what did I do? if I care to change my behavior, or what did, you know, the powers that be think was disinformation? And you can kind of argue it. But when, and this is what we're experiencing right now on Facebook, when your reach is being throttled and you don't know why, it has nothing, it's nothing specific, or you don't know which posts are being throttled and for what reason, you know, we went from, gosh, I think it was like, what did we say? Was it 6 million or 2 million, 2.5 million, you know, impressions every 28 days to like 300,000 overnight. We've been trying to push back on Facebook about, okay, what's going on with this? Because that's not a natural thing. That's throttling. And when you're only doing it to one side, I mean, if you're on Facebook all the time, which I'll admit to getting into the death scroll quite a bit, the dumbest stuff. I see the dumbest stuff in my feed. A lot of like weird movie quotes and clips and fashion blogs and stuff I'd never consume. Yet it's being revved down my throat. And at the same time, our quality political coverage and content is being throttled. And it's like, well, why? So it's infuriating, but it also has a huge impact on politics in the country. Social media has an impact on how people vote. It just does. And the information that gets out there or doesn't get out there can help or hurt candidates and can help or hurt political parties. So it's serious, serious stuff. Okay, we're going long today. Sorry, guys. I'm so chatty today. Well, it's election day after all. We'll get to questions and comments from the live stream coming up next. But if you have not taken the First Mark challenge yet, do it. Take the time, set aside the time to do it. Everyone needs insurance. So every single person who's listening or watching to this show can benefit from the First Mark Challenge. Basically, what it entails is getting a hold of First Mark and go to firstmarkinsurance.com, scheduling time to take the First Mark Challenge. You can do it virtually. You go through your current insurance with them. You talk over your insurance needs, what you maybe need or don't need, and do you want to save money or what are your goals? They'll go out. They'll shop the market for you. They'll do it for free, and then in a few weeks, they'll come back to you with their recommendations. And as Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, has told us, it's not just about saving money.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage, it's having the right coverage at a competitive rate, and it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't, okay? No, they can't, but I promise it will be worth the time investment on the front end. It's already paid dividends for Mike and I. We've been members of the First Mark family for about 6 months. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Set some time aside to take the First Mark challenge. Future you will be happy you did. All right, let's get to questions and comments, shall we? And then we'll truncate our sanity check today because, man, we're going over and you guys are going to see us again at 8:30 p.m. tonight. All right, on voting, Donna says, my 11-year-old son was with me yesterday while I dropped my ballot off in a ballot drop box. He was excited to make his vote. I explained he was not old enough yet. He said he has to live with these decisions longer than I have to, so he should get a say. I could not argue with such logic. We are raising him right. Yeah, I love when people post videos and pictures of their kids putting in their ballots for them, which is legal, by the way. Some people are like, you can't. I'm like, yes, you can do that. You can do that. Neelan, hi, Neil, said, there is no excuse not to vote. This weekend, I sat with my daughter, who just turned 18, and showed her how to read the pamphlet along with the ballot. She got really into it. Love it. Teach them young. Let me see. Adam says, I would also add on the Nadine Woodward ad that Democrats will let the entire state literally burn to the ground and throw their hands up in the air, blame climate change and do nothing. To turn a fire to blame Republicans is a new low. Yeah, I mean, I look forward to, I don't think that we're going to hear back from the state Democratic Party, by the way. Definitely not today, but hopefully we can get to the truth of, is this a fake fire victim? So bad. Let me see here. On the Democratic ad that we talked about there, Rick says, if any of us produced any sort of misleading or false ad for our businesses, we'd be in big trouble and the AG would surely come after us. Yet political ads mislead and lie constantly and are only getting worse. Where in the hell is the accountability there? I do agree. I tend to agree that there has to be better regulations of political ads. I mean, the only challenge with that, and I'll say this as sort of a devil's advocate thing, the only challenge is who are the gatekeepers? Who are the gatekeepers? And if it's a state agency, if it's tied to the Secretary of State's office, are they going to gatekeep equally? And are they going to be perhaps more harsh to a certain side of the aisle, and
we need somebody ads. To police it, kind of like police that are supposed to be nonpartisan.
Yes, exactly. So I don't know. It's really hard. How do you? I mean, PACs I think have stricter rules when it comes to the truthfulness of mm-hmm. their content, I believe. But when it comes to, I don't know that I want the government policing political ads. I honestly think it just comes down to wonderful shows like the Undivided Podcast. Support us for $5 a month at undividedpod.com. and media outlets doing their jobs and not letting these people off the hook. This is egregious.
Yeah, they need their own party to push back and say, whoa,
yeah, they do.
This is too much.
And there are, I mean, I have no doubt that some of the fire victims over there in Spokane, the real ones, are mm-hmm. Democrats and Republicans. And every single one of them, if this is a fake fire victim, and even if it's not, every single one of them should be mortified at the prospect of that fire, which was so devastating, being used and leveraged by a political party to win an election, and should be mortified that the ad would put words into the mouth of Spokane's mayor to suggest that she wanted her own city to burn down. So you got to speak out about this stuff. And I'm sure there are some people watching who either were or knew people who were impacted by that fire. I'd be very curious to hear from you. All right, on the long-term care tax and these ongoing efforts to make it optional, sign the initiatives, letsgowa.com. They're not our initiatives, by the way. I know we've supported an initiative in the past. They're just mm-hmm. all happen to be initiatives that I very much would like to see collect the needed signatures.
Most likely there's a place to sign near you.
Yes.
And I have talked to people who've been taking them to bars at night, having people sign them.
Drunk signing.
I mean,
it.
Come on, grab one, go get it signed by and turn it in.
The nice thing about these initiatives, you don't even need to be drunk to want to sign them.
That's
They're
right.
that good.
They're easy.
Mike says, just remove the income limit on the Social Security tax and you've solved a lot of long-term care issues of today. Just make sure it encompasses stock options, bonuses, other compensations, etc. That's a good point. Mark says, long-term care is just another tax in disguise. The Democrats know and expect to have surplus funds for their use in other areas. Very true. On the show, Jethro McButterpants. Dude, he says, happy 2-year Patreon anniversary to you guys. I just noticed that we started subscribing in November of 2021. I'm fairly certain we jumped on board during the initial rollout. Celebratory drinks to follow. Yeah, so we're coming up on, I believe, the 11th of November will be 2 years.
I knew that too because in my memory is a picture of your leaving Q13
yeah.
picture came up, your party that night.
2 years is insane. Yeah, I quit my job at Fox right after the November election in 2021.
Right.
I agreed to stay through the election and 2 days later launched the Undivided Podcast on Patreon.
Look at us now.
Oh, look at us. Anyway, I'll have a big sappy moment on the 11th. Are we on the air on the 11th? No, it's this weekend. So maybe on Thursday's show, have a little sappy moment about it. And just things I've learned. I've learned so many interesting things in doing this. There's been a lot of challenges. It's stressful. I mean, Nicole knows yesterday I was so stressed. I was complaining all morning. My whole neck and back hurt. Just like the business aspect of trying to do it. It's so stressful. I mean, trying to get people to subscribe to a platform they've never heard of. And I hate that. I mean, if there was one job I'd never want, it's sales. But you have to take on a sales role when you do a job like this. There's just so many things I've learned. But anyway, thank you for remembering. It's almost 2 years. Just wild how time flies. Let me see. Let me fit one more in. On NASCAR, Matthew Cook says, the way you get diversity in an area or field that hasn't had it is you start reaching out to that community to include them in internships and other programs. Those that excel can move up based on merit, 100%. And as long as you're not limiting internships to those communities or opportunities to those communities, but you include them, and right, you hit it right on the head. You go out and you make it clear that you want them to be part of it. Because, you know, diversity of race, diversity of gender, but there's only two genders. That's two. Diversity of gender, diversity of background, socioeconomic status. Those things are all so important. I 100% believe that. But it can't be, again, putting one down to lift up another. We can do better than that. All right. Let's see. I was going to do a full sanity check today. Let's save it. Save it. We're going over today. I had a different one. We'll put it in the show tomorrow.
We'll save it.
Mm-hmm. But I'll still do a sanity check.
A vote one.
Hey, don't ruin it. I only get... Why do you always got to steal my thunder? My sanity check for today.
Sometimes I think I'm muted.
Listen, my sanity check for today. Go vote. Just go vote. Especially if you're saying, Nicole ruins everything for me. I can't have anything to myself. No, seriously, go vote. That's my sanity check for today. Thank you for being here. Reminder, 8:30 p.m. tonight. Nicole, if I allow her to stay, will be back with me. 8:30 p.m. tonight. We'll live across all platforms, wherever you watch the live show during the week. You can catch us tonight. We'll have half hour to an hour of coverage of election results. So we will see you there. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your support of our mission and our movement, 2 years in the making, to give common sense a comeback. If you don't support the show yet, after 2 years, what are you waiting for? You can sign up. It's just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. We'll see you back here for our live election coverage tonight at 8:30.